The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life with your host, Renee David Alkali. Are you searching for the path to the discovery of wholeness and balance in your life? We'll discuss the future of holistic healthcare and how the concepts discussed on today's show can help you make better choices in your life. Now, here is your host, Renee David Alkali.
Good morning and welcome to Mind, Body, Spirit. Thank you for the emails you've sent and the support you've given us. Today's show is going to be quite interesting. We have a few fascinating topics to share with you today, and all of them revealing the amazing power of music and its important role in holistic education, health, and our daily lives. Music, as one of the arts, of course, has been widely popular since the most ancient times. The recent discoveries of music as a therapeutic modality are very profound. They're being used, music is being used as therapy in many different settings, with seniors, with children, as therapy for many different kinds of conditions, in Alzheimer's, for relaxation, for meditation. And we're very happy today to have a guest with us, Andrew Salamanca, who is a teacher, a performer, and a composer. He's also the music director at the Genesis Society, a teacher of ukulele, guitar, and drum. He's organized and facilitates drum circles. He has learned to play over 10 instruments, many of these being self-taught and from different traditions. Most recently, Andrew spent the last 2 years studying Chinese classical music in Taiwan, where he also performed with a diverse mix of international musicians and recorded original compositions in a variety of world music genres. He's currently developing a program of music therapy for different populations, and we're very happy to have Andrew with us this morning as our guest to speak on this very fascinating topic. Welcome to our show, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
When we spoke earlier during the week, I had a chance to speak with you a little bit about the work that you're doing. We spoke a little bit about music, the body, and the brain, and their interrelationships. And perhaps you can tell us a little bit, just for beginning this conversation, of some of the benefits of learning a musical instrument and how it might affect music, body, and brain.
Well, there are a great deal of benefits to learning an instrument. And considering the plasticity of the brain, I really believe that you can learn at any age. Now, we can talk a little bit about the Suzuki method. This is a method developed by concert violinist Shinichi Suzuki as a way to teach young children music. And most of these children are from 18 months old to 6 years old. And he took a look at the way we naturally acquire language as children. And he applied this to music teaching. He called this the mother tongue approach. Now, what's unique about this method is not only the approach, but that the parents are involved in the class. They help reinforce positive behavior in class and at home. And there are both private and group lessons, which is important because these are some of the first social interactions these children are having. And they're learning how to interact with each other in fun and acceptable ways. So this method for early childhood learning was researched, and it shows that only after 1 year of training there are significant changes in the brain, and there are significant improvements. Now, we also know that playing an instrument leads to improvements in concentration, nonverbal reasoning, fine motor skills, as well as auditory skills. Really, the list goes on and on. So when a child is learning an instrument, not only are they improving certain areas of their brain that are dedicated to sound processing or senses, but they're also learning important values like commitment and dedication, along with teamwork as well. So I think it's really, music is really an essential part of a holistic education, and there are a lot of long-term benefits.
Very interesting. So you're saying, if I understand correctly, that not only the pleasurable aspects of learning a music instrument, but that there are some very distinct holistic applications or holistic benefits that come into the process. So you mentioned a particular type of music that's being introduced, the Suzuki method with violin. And is this a technique that's being introduced not only on a one-to-one basis, but into classrooms?
Important distinction, this method was developed by a concert violinist, so they're not actually using violins. But what they are doing, they're starting to incorporate this more, and it's basically based on natural movements, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of singing, there's a lot of body movement, which is teaching children gross body movements. So this is something children have to kind of master before they start to fine-tune their fine motor skills. So this is important as well. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this more, it's incorporated more into classrooms, and I think also music programs, unfortunately, they don't really have all the funding that they need to really have the impact that they should.
It's so fascinating. When I think of music therapy applications, if we look at ancient civilizations going all the way back to Sumer, where we find Sumerian civilization, which is 4,000 BCE, before the Common Era, so we're talking about 6,000 years ago, we see the development of music in those cultures, and throughout different civilizations, the Chaldeans, the Persians, and so on, we find music to be very much a part of the religious systems and part of the ritual, the religious rituals of different ancient peoples, but also very much part of the healing systems through the use of shamanic chanting or shamanic healing that we find even today among native peoples. I think when I think of someone who's presented with an unfamiliar piece of music, a musician, for example, would search a page of notes for some kind of a sign to inform him or her regarding the tempo. What's the tempo that's appropriate for that movement? So it might be fast, slow, upbeat, melancholy, or whatever the communication would be. So if someone, one of our listeners, were a musician, and the term which confronted them was religious or pious or spiritual or healing, what kind of a pace would you think that might be, or would you communicate if we were using that in a shamanic way or Native American ritual or perhaps Amazonian? How would they be using this?
How would they be using music?
Would there be a special pace or tone, or would it be lively, joyous? In other words, what would be the approach to be using music therapeutically among native people, besides the uses that we're using it in today?
Okay, I see. Well, first it's good to keep in mind that shamanism really refers to a vast range of beliefs, just as religion refers to a vast range of beliefs. Now, in shamanism, we can say that primarily they are spirit-based and nature-based. Mm-hmm. And really, I think if you look at some of the earliest medicine, and it even continues up until today, you can see that song and drum play integral roles in these societies. And if you look at the importance of the shaman, he really holds the power to heal not only by using physical methods, but by also entering a spiritual dimension, most of the time with the aid of music. So song and drums have probably been the earliest medicine, along with local plants and herbs. So one way that it's used in the Yoruba tradition, drumming is, there are a few drummers that sit outside the circle of the ceremony, and their role is to evoke certain spirits that the participants want to be ridden by. This is the term. So they want to be basically taken over by this spirit. So the drummers are basically beating ecstatically, mm-hmm. to basically create a trance in the person. And it's important here that it's not necessarily the sound that you're listening to that has the intense effect, but it's more that the vibrational field that's created by these drums has an effect on the body. So this is just one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that music and religion, religious practice, have been intertwined for ages now. So I'm sure everyone has experienced this in a church or a various temple. A group of healers I'd really like to focus on, and I really find this quite interesting. These are curanderos, and these are Amazonian healers in countries like Peru. Now, song for these healers are absolutely necessary. So you cannot have medicine without song. And these shamans sing ícaros. Ícaros are sacred songs which are given to them by the plant spirits during their ceremonies, visions, or dreams. So it may sound a little strange to you at first, but here's a little bit more about their healing practice. Usually participants of a future healing ceremony will adhere to a strict diet called dieta. It's an organic diet, and it usually lasts from a few days to several months. During this time, there is really no salt, no sugar, alcohol, oils, spices, or any sexual activity. And this is really to prepare the mind, body, and spirit for the ceremony. At the ceremony, after the participants are ready and the shaman gives the proper medicine, the shaman begins to sing ícaros, which are his tools for healing. And this is very important because if he did not have these sacred songs, healing could not really take place in this tradition. So when a lawyer takes his or her briefcase to work, a curandero takes his ícaros.
That's truly, truly a wonderful practice. Let me go back for just a moment, because I'm fascinated by this whole subject, and certainly I use music in my own work, but not perhaps certainly not nearly to the degree that you're using it. Can we step back for a moment and just ask about your particular background? I've given a little background from what I know, but how did you get started and how did you find your way into music and into this kind of an approach or this kind of thought process?
Well, I started playing the saxophone at the age of 10. I played in the school band for a few years, and I really enjoyed it. Then in high school, I took a few guitar lessons, and then I actually started teaching myself guitar, bass guitar, drums, and the ukulele. It was really after learning the ukulele that I became more curious about different styles of world music, ethnomusicology, and music therapy. So then I became then I began to learn stranger instruments like the steel drums from Trinidad, the Dumbek drum, which is from the Middle East, and two traditional instruments from China. One is called pipa. This is a four-stringed lute related to the oud. And the other one is called guzheng, and this is like a harp. It's a harp-like zither. And I still have a few more instruments on my list I'd like to learn, but I may have to save up for a plane ticket first.
Now, I understand you mentioned learning some instruments from the Chinese tradition. I know you were living in Taiwan for a while, and you've just come back this past summer. How was that experience for you? Did you start learning, beside the instruments, obviously, did you start learning a particular style of music that was, that I would imagine that's associated with the culture?
Well, the experience for me was amazing. Initially, I went to Taiwan because I received a scholarship to study Mandarin. So I studied for a semester, and I found that it was really quite a comfortable place to be. So then after that, I moved back to Taipei with two goals in mind. One was to become fluent in Mandarin, and I'm still working on that, but having a lot of fun with it. And really the purpose of learning Mandarin is to kind of dive into the genre or the style of Chinese classical music and to really gain a better understanding of it. So that was my second goal. The second goal really was to learn Chinese classical music along with Taiwanese folk styles.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have about 4 minutes till our break, and I know you've brought a number of instruments to play for us. If we can stay within that 4 minutes until our break, because I would hate to cut you off in the middle of a piece, perhaps you'd share one piece of music with us for a few minutes. If we have to do that break, I will, of course, let you know. Would you want to do that at this time?
Oh, sure. The first song I'll be playing for you is called The Waltz. It's a very unique song for me because it's actually my first composition, and it was quite an obsession for about 8 or 9 months. So here's a little taste of The Waltz, and I'll be playing this on ukulele.
Okay. To take our break, Andrew. I hate to cut it off at this point, and I do want to speak about what you've just done, because I'm sure our listeners want to know exactly what happened as you were playing that. We are going to be taking our break at this time, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Be visionary. This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Which voice do you hear? The voice of your ego or the voice of your spirit? The one you listen to can determine your entire future, your decisions, your existence. Listen to Two Voices with Dr. Nick and Reverend Linda Martin. We'll identify, discover, and explore your two voices and help you to determine how they shape your life. It's an experience which can allow you to transform your ego, hear the voice of spirit more clearly, and create the life you were meant to live. Two Voices is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Seventh Wave. Are you looking for better sex? Learn how to have the best sex of your life when you join Ellen Etoff and her program, Ecstatica, the way to an erotic, ecstatic love life. You'll explore every aspect of love, sex, and intimacy, and discover new realms of possibility, including the spiritual dimensions of sex. It's an adults-only world with guest experts sharing valuable tips and techniques and so much more. Cultivate the powerful energies of sexuality and an undefended heart. Listen and join in live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
You are listening to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life, featuring your host, Renee David Alkali. Connect with the show today by calling in to 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. You can also reach us via email to renee@genesishealthbeauty.com. Now, back to this week's show.
And we're back. We're back with Andrew Salamanca, musician, composer, and a young man who's doing some wonderful work in developing programs in music therapy. We just heard an example of a piece called The Waltz, played on ukulele. And Andrew, questions that came to my mind as I was listening is, when we listen to a song like that, since we're speaking about music as a therapeutic modality, as we listen to a song like that, what parts of the brain are affected and how is the body affected?
You know, there's something very interesting about the effect of music on the brain. When you listen to music, there's not just one music center in the brain that's being affected. Music has the ability to activate up to 15 or 20 areas in the brain. And these areas are spread throughout. The perception of music is created by these multiple areas interacting simultaneously. And I really want to focus on that. It's a perception of music. It's a perception that the sounds are pleasing. There are some cases of amusia where people can listen to the most beautiful symphony and they perceive it as meaningless noise, crashing pots and pans. So it's really the perception of music that's created by the brain. Now, areas that are involved in creating this perception include the auditory cortex. This is the part of the brain that processes and analyzes the initial sounds you hear. Now, when I play a song for someone, usually the first sign that shows me they're really listening is when they start tapping. So I'll start to notice people will tap their fingers or tap their toes within maybe 10 or 15 seconds of me beginning the song. And they actually don't notice it. I do. They may even start bobbing their head as well. And these movements are controlled by the motor cortex. This is the area of the brain that also makes it possible to play instruments and to dance. I think it's very important to note that music activates areas that are very closely related to emotion and memory. The amygdala in the brain and the nucleus accumbens are involved in the emotional response we have to music, and the hippocampus plays a key role in memory. Music also has the effect on the hypothalamus to release endorphins, and it also causes an increase in dopamine and serotonin, and these are all associated with positive emotions.
So as we listen to this music or other forms of music, we can put it in layman's terms that we're just going to feel good. Simply, we get a good feeling from it. And from what I understand that you were saying, that people begin to tap to the rhythm of music. It's interesting that in some of the studies of new psychologies, like neuro-linguistic programming, for example, one of the things that we find is that when people come into a state of rapport with one another, there's a similarity in body movement. So that's very interesting when we look at a group response, even a thing like laughter. When people go to a movie and it's a comedy, people will more readily laugh along with other people than they would if they were watching that particular program by themselves. So there's that level of response that puts us in rapport with something outside of ourselves that's nevertheless reaching within. So I'm kind of getting some of that from what you're saying about the effect on the hippocampus and the hypothalamus and various portions of the brain, whether it's going up into the hormonal system and affecting the pituitary and pineal glands and moving down through the entire hormonal system. You're inspiring me to want to search much more deeply into this whole area. Does music then also affect our learning, per se? You know, does it improve learning in some way? And what kind of music might that be? Some music might be more effective than other kinds of music, I would think.
Sure. There's really quite a lot of research that's being conducted now about this very topic. Research conducted at the Stanford University School of Medicine shows that music from 18th century European composers activates areas in the brain that are involved with attention, decision-making, and memory. It has also been shown in other studies that the music of the Baroque era, which typically has a tempo between 50 and 80 beats a minute, so this is about more or less one beat per second, this type of music induces deeper states of focus, and actually it puts you into a state that makes it really ideal for learning new information and committing it to memory. So when you're listening to this type of music, it really it allows you to acquire new vocabulary. For children especially, this is important. And it really allows you to really memorize it fully and fully understand it. Mm. Now, after all of my years of musical experience, I can tell you the most amazing benefit for me is the ability to focus. And actually, by playing music, I can reach incredibly deep states of focus, clarity, and understanding that are even incomparable to other states of consciousness. And it's much more intense than any other form of meditation for me. Of course, it's something that's developed over the years, so I can't say by picking up an instrument for a couple minutes, you'll be able to focus amazingly. But actually, after playing music for 15 years, this is the greatest long-term benefit I see in myself.
It's interesting that you mentioned Baroque music. As a person involved in teaching meditation for stress reduction and for spiritual growth, I've often used Baroque music because especially the largo movements, the slow movement, which traditionally in Baroque is at 60 beats per minute. And some of the studies that I'm aware of are that when we go into a meditative state, when we're coming out of that alpha-beta range and moving more into the theta range of brain waves, then we're actually, meditators actually go into that space of 60 beats per minute. So when we use music that's at 60 beats, there's a synchronicity, there's a, I guess, a movement into some form of rapport with that rhythm, so that it helps us get into that theta state. And what I'm familiar with certainly is that once we're in that theta state, we have a capacity for learning which involves both the right and left hemispheres of the brain, where they come more into balance. Throughout the day, they kind of shift in terms of dominance. So it's interesting that you're mentioning this from a slightly different perspective, but I was aware of that. And Baroque music, of course, is very traditionally used for that level of spiritual growth and connection. As a teacher, Andrew, how could music because now, since we know this, since there is substantial evidence to the fact that music can be such an aid in learning, how can music be included in the classroom? Because when I was a child, when I was in school as a child, we had music programs, and today it seems that many schools, because of, I guess, budget cuts and other things, are doing away with many of these kinds of programs. I think that's a real loss, and it actually inhibits our ability to learn. So how do you feel about that, and how could we include more music in the classroom?
Well, like I said before, I think music is an essential part of holistic education. And as a teacher, I really find including music into your lessons is a great way to engage and motivate children. Integrating themed music along with certain props could be a great way to set the scene in your lesson. So it's a great way to put students in the mindset and kind of get them into a certain role or a certain scene that you're trying to introduce to them. And actually, these role-playing games that involve music really engage visual learners, right? If you're using props or maybe costumes, they engage auditory learners, right? Just from the sound, the music itself. And if you're including movement as well, it engages kinesthetic learners. So I think really these are the three main types of learners. If you're only appealing to just one, which most of the time can be either visual, you know, writing on the board, or just auditory, just talking, which is actually not so interesting for children, you're really missing out here. Another way you can use music in class, you can use background music to greet students in the morning or to set an atmosphere of focus. It can also be useful to play relaxing music like Baroque music while students are doing independent work. You can even use musical sounds to signal a change in activity or topic. And before no time, actually, the students will know what time it is before you tell them. So they hear the sound, they say, oh, it's time for reading. Everyone clean up and let's get our books, right? Another very interesting way you can use it in class is you can take something students need to memorize and turn it into a tune. So I know teachers use this for multiplication tables or for phonics. These are some good topics to do that. And actually, you can add musical sounds to classroom games to make it seem more like a game show. So let's say one team gets the answer correct, and you have this sound. Right?
Yes.
Or let's say one team gets the answer wrong, and you hear, you know, something like that. And kids will really react to this quite positively.
So the music then would act, to putting it in a language that I'm familiar with, the music would act as a kind of anchor or a trigger, which would then be related to a particular stimulus and response set of behaviors. So you hear a particular kind of music, and there's an internal response through repetition, a response that says, this is what is happening. What is happening is there's a time for a break, or there's a, what's happening is that I'm being rewarded with some kind of a sweet sound, or there's a dissonance where I think techniques like that have been used in a very rudimentary way, not nearly as complex as what you're speaking about, in a rudimentary way through some of the neurofeedback training with kids with ADD, for example, where you might have a computer program that gives a pleasant sound when they're working within the brainwave range that's set for them for improvement. And if they're out of that range, there's a dissonant sound that tells them that it's not quite working. So you're, of course, putting it in a much more complex environment and with a whole different set of responses that are more complicated than just being within a brainwave range. We know that music can shape an individual dramatically, but on a larger scale, to broaden it out, you know, I function from an ecology point of view, namely, I always ask three questions before I do something. Is it good for me? Is it good for the other person? And is it good for the planet or the community around us? If the answer is yes on all three of those, then I'll usually just go ahead and do it. If there's a no on any of those, then I question whether I should be doing that or not. So my question here for you would be on a larger scale, how does this affect communities and societies?
Well, one amazing example of this, we can take a look at the case of the Venezuela Youth Orchestra. And here we can see what powerful effects there are on societies. This orchestra was founded by José Antonio Abreu in 1975, and it really became a social program aimed to give children from poor families better opportunities. And the program has gone on for many years, and it's a great success. Now they have over 300,000 children nationally, all with top-rated orchestras. So José Abreu was awarded a TED Talk Prize recently for his amazing contributions. So he has a lot of valuable wisdom to share about music's effects on the individual, the family, and community. So you can check out more of what he has to say there. His most powerful quote from that talk, in my opinion, is this. He says, when a child learns an instrument, he is no longer poor. He becomes a child in progress heading for a professional level who will later become a full citizen. Very powerful words. When a child learns an instrument, he is no longer poor. And the effect that this has on children living in ghettos or living in very poor neighborhoods is they actually become, you know, you can have an 8, 9, 10-year-old child becoming a role model for the family and really instilling a sense of commitment and dedication and teamwork in their brothers and sisters and their friends around them as well.
Well, you know, we have about 15 seconds before our next break, and I really can't wait to get back to this incredibly interesting topic. I'll just mention in what reminded me, or what this brought to my memory, what you just said, is a couple of native boys from, I believe, Brazil, Los Indios Trabajados, who picked up a couple of cheap guitars and learned to play them, and totally transformed their lives by becoming two outstanding self-taught guitarists with many recordings and just beautiful, beautiful music. We're going to come back to this topic speak more with Andrew Salamanca If you want to contact Andrew, by the way, his website is www.soundcloud.com/Andrew-Salamanca. Or you can contact us and we'll certainly be able to put you in touch with Andrew. We're going to be back with you in just a few moments. Stay with us and we're going to continue speaking with Andrew and finding out a good deal more about this incredible topic.
Invite meaning and inspiration to your life. This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
On the program Inside Out, our outsides match our insides. Join host Beth Green along with co-host James Maynard for an insightful weekly journey that lets us all be real with no boundaries. We'll discuss current events, interview amazing guests, challenge old ideas, and see ourselves and our world more clearly. It's about you as much as us. So you're invited to call in, write in, and most of all, tune in. Listen for Inside Out, live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane, right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Explore subconscious programs, belief systems, and past life memories that may be sabotaging your life. Join host Dorian Light on her show, All About You, as she helps you to shift, change, and heal your life. Each week, Dorian does a light session using psychic energetics and the language of light to energetically shift and clear negative patterns you have stored regarding that week's topics. Step into the realm of infinite possibilities for your life. All About You airs live Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific on 7th Wave. This is the 7th Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are listening to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life, featuring your host, Renee David Alkali. Connect with the show today by calling in to 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. You can also reach us via email to renee@genesishealthbeauty.com. Now, back to this week's show.
We're back with Andrew Salamanca, and the topic for today's show is music as medicine or music as a therapeutic modality. Andrew, we were just speaking about the benefits of music within the classroom and how it's helped to affect societies and communities and really improve societies and communities. We had earlier spoken about music as a form of shamanism, and certainly as an aspect of religious and spiritual growth. I have used it that way myself over the years. I'm very familiar with music within the biblical tradition, for example. There's a tradition that Jacob, one of the patriarchs, while he was tending Laban's sheep or Laban's flocks, he praised God with resplendent songs. It's a traditional story about it. And the wind carried these arias with them, apparently from this mythology, for 1,000 years before they finally were being revealed to King David. At that point, King David would awaken to the sounds of the northern wind playing his harp, which was suspended above his head. And we read that in Psalms, where King David said, "I will rise at midnight to praise you." And at that point, apparently at midnight, he would rise when the wind played the strings of his harp, and he would play the harp and begin to compose his psalms, his songs. So certainly music has always had the ability to uplift and to influence. I'd like to just go back to that point a little bit, and also the idea of music as medicine. You were speaking earlier about some of the shamanic practices. I'd like to connect those a little bit to how they're used in modern therapy. Could you explain a little bit more about the role of music in these different traditions, or perhaps go over it once again for our listeners, and how we're learning from these healing practices today, how we're using them? And I do understand that you wanted to share a piece of music with us as well.
Sure. Well, like I said before, song, singing and drumming has been some of the earliest medicine, along with local plants and herbs. So first, let's talk about song. It's really been used in so many traditions worldwide. It shows us how essential it is to us. Singing promotes deeper, healthier breathing and relaxation in the body. One amazing way it's being used today in modern music therapy is through melodic intonation training. This is especially helpful for people with aphasia who lack the ability to speak because of a brain injury. So what they're doing is training people to speak through singing. The areas of the brain that make singing possible are rewired to adapt to speech. We also know that singing is being used in therapy groups for Alzheimer's patients, which is really quite powerful considering the relationship music and emotion, the relationship music and emotion has in the brain. Many of these people with Alzheimer's cannot really remember where they are, who their husband is, who they are, or anything really about their life. So we see when singing is used in these groups and music is used with these types of people, we can see how it really activates a person's memory and allows them to access important facts about their own lives that they wouldn't normally be able to know. And actually, in cases of dementia, this is an amazing fact. It has been documented that musical memories will even outlast memories of family or friends. So it shows you the deep connection that we have with music in our brains. Now, I'm going to introduce another concept, and this is the concept of the drum circle. This is really ancient knowledge that's just being recently tested and adopted by music therapists for many groups. And drum circles prove useful for people with cancer, anxiety, people with substance abuse problems, alcoholism, as well as children with autism. And it's particularly effective for children with autism because many of them are nonverbal. So they cannot normally interact how many people do. So it allows them to interact socially and express themselves in a really, in a new way. It allows them to communicate in a new way. Not only that, but children in general respond better to music therapy than play therapy. So it really shows you there's a fun factor there too. And one last bit I'll finish up with, just before my song. In a study conducted by Bittman in 2001, drumming has been proven to boost the immune response, leading to a decrease in cortisol. This is your stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And an increase in the number of cancer-fighting cells in the body. Another fact is music also overrides pain signals in the limbic system of the brain, and it lessens the need for pain medication. It speeds healing when played in surgery as well. So it really shows you the effect that music has on the mind and the body.
I just reminded when you're talking about song, before you do your song, because as you know, we know each other for a while, Andrew, and as you know, I'm very involved with spiritual practice, and I'm reminded of Psalm 100, where King David said, "Serve God with joy, come before Him with song," and really, the idea of how we can fully employ this powerful and delightful tool in, for me, it's always been for within the spiritual area, and now to see this, the power of it within the just within the area of healing, how it affects us literally on every single level of our being. So if you're ready, I would love to hear the next piece of music that you want to share with us.
Sure. This instrument I'll be introducing is called the Dumbek drum, and this is a traditional drum from the Middle East. The one I have in particular is a ceramic drum from Egypt. So I will be introducing Maksum, which is a traditional rhythm from the Middle East. I'm going to play it 4 times so you can get a feel for it, and then from there I'm just going to improvise freely. So I know the beginning, but we'll see where it ends. It'll be a surprise.
Okay.
Here we are.
Yes. Hello? Andrew?
Yes.
Andrew. Ah, good. We're back. Okay, so that was a Dumbek? Was that the instrument?
Yes, it's a Dumbek drum, also known as Darbuka.
Uh-huh.
And that was just to really give you a sense of that style of drumming and really, give you a new perspective on that.
I want to just mention that we have about 3 minutes, so it's not going to be possible to cover all the topics that I had questions for, because this is such a vast area. I certainly I wanted to deal a little bit with your insights into music and daily life. I don't know if we're going to get there, so maybe in the time that we have left, we can. Which is just about 2 minutes, we can just have you very briefly speak about if I'm a musician, for example, and I want to provide some healing benefits, but let's say I'm not a trained music therapist, are there any programs or centers that I could look into? And as you explain that, perhaps I'll say my goodbyes at this point to our listening audience, and we can finish with whatever other piece of music you have, and that will take us out of the show. So just quickly to contact Andrew, you would be able to get on his website, soundcloud.com/Andrew-Salamanca. So perhaps you could take us out at this point by just giving some information about what programs or centers a musician could look into. And I know you have another piece of music you'd like to share, so we'll kind of just go out with that.
Sure. Well, I think in general, any hospital or senior center or libraries are looking for performers. So if you really want to share your music, this is a good place to start. One organization I love getting involved with is Musicians on Call. It's an amazing program that brings live music into hospitals for patients. They have programs in New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Nashville, Miami, and Los Angeles. And over 13 years of programs have provided more than 400,000 patients and their families and friends, along with hospital staff, with an amazing experience. So you can check them out. So definitely I would recommend Musicians on Call. Now, I'll finish up with the last piece here. This is one I love playing in hospitals. It's a really a cheerful piece.
Okay, we have about a minute, so we'll go out with that piece. So,
okay, excellent. Here we are. Chinchilla Hop is the name.
Very nice, very nice. All right, Andrew, I thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you'll join us again because we have so many more questions that that I think our listeners would be absolutely thrilled to hear about and to know about, and I hope that our listeners will find music in their lives.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you again for tuning in to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life. Please be sure to join Renee David Alkali again next Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of the program on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. May you find a better balance in your life this week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.